Please support the Climate Change and Happiness podcast. See the donate page at climatechangeandhappiness.com.
Welcome to Climate Change and Happiness, an international podcast that explores the personal side of climate change, your feelings, what the crisis means to you, and how to cope and thrive. And now, your hosts, Thomas Doherty and Panu Pikkala.
Well, hello, I'm Thomas Doherty.
And I am Panu Pikkala.
And welcome to Climate Change and Happiness, our podcast and a show for people around the world who are thinking and feeling deeply about climate change and other environmental issues and other big important issues in the world and their values and how they take action and how they cope and how they come together in their communities. And we're really glad to have a returning guest with us today.
Hello, Thomas and Panu. It's lovely to be talking with you again. So my name's Caroline Hickman. I'm a psychotherapist and a lecturer at the University of Bath in the UK. I lecture in social work, which is relevant to what we're going to be talking about. And my research for the last 10 years or so has been primarily children and young people globally and how they feel and what they think about the climate and ecological emergency.
Yes. And, you know, Caroline is a treasured colleague of Panu and I, and Panu and Caroline have worked a lot together, and we've spoken to Caroline in the past on the podcast about the plight of young people and climate. And we'll reference that previous episode in our show notes if you want to get some more background. But we've been talking about various things in our work, and we're going to plunge in. Listeners, you'll just get a sense of our, you know, how we operate here. We're going to plunge into an issue we've been talking about, trying to figure out for ourselves and also figure out how to cope personally, and also how, insights for you all listeners to think about. And it's this idea of moral injury, this concept. You might have seen it in or heard it in the news. And we're going to talk about that today in kind of plain language and how that manifests. And, you know, this is coming up. I'm curious about it myself because I'm trying to write about this in my manuscript regarding coping with climate change. And I was talking to someone that I respect who was confused because they associated the idea of moral injury with military veterans and people that have either witnessed or taken part in really terrible actions that have gone against their values. Mm-hmm. And I know other people have used the term moral injury in the medical professions, medical professionals feeling burned out or struggling to act according to their values in various medical systems due to limits and economy and politics and things like that. So, and I know Panu and Caroline have talked about moral injury in the sense of the betrayal and abandonment of young people, feeling that leaders in the world who are supposed to have their best interests in mind have sort of not been addressing climate change. So there's, you know, I think the way I tell people it's moral injury is literally what it says. You have values and morals and they've been hurt. Just like a bone has been broken, you believe something about the world and something has happened to really damage your sense of values. But that's just the way that I think about it. But I wanted to open up this topic and see what you all think. And I know, Caroline, you've plumbed this area for a while, and Panu as well from the emotional side. But maybe toss it over to Caroline to get us started. Then, Panu, you can follow up.
Thank you, Thomas. So I think, to start at the beginning, I would say, why is it important that we explore this question of moral injury in relation to climate distress, climate anxiety? Because it can look or feel like it's something different, but actually it's closely related to climate distress. And that's because we are becoming more familiar with this argument that climate anxiety, climate distress is an emotionally mentally healthy response to the ecological pressures that we're facing in the world. So we can say that, and then we can say, as I often want to say to anyone, well, you're feeling this because this distress because you care, so you should feel proud that you care, rather than pathologize or think there's something wrong with you. So we're framing it that way, and that, you know, makes a lot of sense to most of us involved in this work in climate psychology. But the question remains, now what? Then what? Because you've got people in despair who are confused, and we're saying it's okay to feel bad and it's okay to not feel okay, but we still need something to understand and locate that level of distress around where anxiety or depression or despair doesn't quite cut it. It doesn't quite explain why, for example, in extreme cases, people may feel that this is unbearable. It's hard to live with. The recent paper I published said, is this an irreconcilable despair? What does it mean that something is unbearable, intolerable, irreconcilable? And we've certainly been talking about, you know, people who are self-harming or suicidal as a result of this frustration and confusion, abandonment and despair. So I think we need something like moral injury to help us understand this is a slightly different form of distress. It's not just emotional pain. It's not just about emotion. It's not just difficult feelings. And it's that relational aspect that comes in that makes it intolerable, unbearable, irreconcilable, because of that breakdown of the relationship of trust in people that you'd invested faith, hope, belief that they cared about you, or that they had your best interests at heart, or that they'd sent you into a war zone fighting on the right side. As those defenses or those beliefs break down, you're left with, what do you hold on to? What keeps you safe in the world? I can see you nodding, Panu. Can you come in with the emotion a bit more?
Yes, Bom, thanks Thomas and Caroline for all that. So these issues are so powerful and difficult that they challenge what can be called our meaning systems, which is a bit of a technical word, but we have used it in the podcast also before. So meaning, how are the various meanings in your life organized? And morality and ethics are a big part of that. So with the realization of the actual severity of the ecological crisis, and then realizing how little is done despite all the great efforts by many people, which is a true source of gratitude. We can go back to that later. But still realizing that discrepancy, that contradiction, that is causing impacts on people's meaning systems, on their fundamental beliefs and assumptions about the world. This links with the ecological sorrow article and our discussion about that, and the frameworks of so-called shattered assumptions and meaning reconstruction. And then I see moral injury as related to those processes, where it may be that something that you have thought is moral and right and common to do, you start to realize that, hey, this actually has very bad consequences also, in addition to perhaps bringing other kinds of benefits and even quite deeply meaningful things. Right. So the conflicts can go pretty deep. For example, if a climate conscious person is thinking about traveling by plane to see a sick relative overseas, and being torn about the climate emissions, but also about the very moral and ethical need to go meet this person, for example. So that's just one example of the practical contradictions which are linked with the moral dilemmas. And if people have to go against their morals for long enough time, then the probability of moral injury increases. So there, I think, is a technical link to the war situations also. So the more you have to act against your morals, then the greater the possibility that your moral system, so to speak, becomes injured or damaged. Does that make sense to you too?
It absolutely does. And what you're bringing in is going against your own beliefs. So I want to bring in and also against your family's beliefs, against your community's beliefs, against your friends' beliefs. So these are close, intimate relationships that you've grown up and depended on to give you your own identity and attachment and security and belonging in the world. So as that attachment relationship starts to break down, you don't just question your own beliefs, but you question the beliefs of everybody around you. So many times people say things to me like, you know, how could they believe this? How could they vote that way? How could they? The despair is not just the beliefs around the climate ecological crises, but then the betrayal by loved ones, family, friends. So you've got both going on. I think we need to just get that little bit more of a sense of how it feels to have your heart broken by this. Because when your heart breaks in that moment, it's not just your belief systems, but it's your capacity to tolerate that pain in the world and feel, well, who have I got left in the world? Who can I trust? Who can I hold on to? Who can I be with safely? So you're not just betraying yourself, but you're also being betrayed by others at the same time. I started to think about this based on my social work practice experience when interviewing children and young people around climate change many years ago. I started to listen to their stories, their narratives, and think to myself, but I've heard this before. And where I've heard this before is in the way that children and young people talk about the betrayal and the pain that they feel when they've been let down by their families of origin, their birth families, the very people that they should ideally be able to trust are the people who've betrayed them, who've hurt them. Mm. And not only that, they're the ones who've hurt them because of child abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, physical abuse. But on top of that, so you've got a straightforward neglect or hurt or abuse going on. But alongside that, or on top of it, you've got my, what I like to call pretzeling of your brain in relation to relationship. Who can you trust? Where they're also saying, oh, but we love you. Oh, look, we've got your best interests at heart. Mm-hmm. So you then are not even allowed to experience that hurt and that failure in a clean, direct way. Because you're being told, well, we're doing this because we love you and because we care about you. And it's that, in my view, that causes that injury, because you're left with, who can I trust? All of my belief systems have been broken. So you're then set loose in the world, utterly unable to trust anybody and not being able to trust your own judgment about what's right and what's wrong. So you're broken by that. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. There's so many things going on here. You know, so it's the damage to our morals, the, you know, going against something we know is right, the feeling of betrayal, being the complicity is a big part of it. It's being involved in the system where we don't have a choice. If you're a military person, you're part of the system and you have to take orders. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the system is also your comrades and your meaning. And so there's something that you're entwined with. Same with a family. Mm-hmm. You're entwined with your family. So yes, there's that complicity. I saw a term that I thought was interesting: guilt without fault. Where you're guilty about something that you had to do, even though it wasn't your fault, or you were forced to do it. But just to expand this out, healthcare providers, medical people, you know, nurses witnessing difficult situations where they see unnecessary suffering of their patients and they feel like they're not doing enough. So there's also a piece of, we're not doing enough, we're not good enough, we're not adequate to this challenge. I think when we talk about coping with all this stuff, we'll have to get to some way where we feel adequate to do something adequate for ourselves. You know, and then it's just complicated. We have to be careful. If listeners are listening, you know, they're in very severe cases, you know, especially with people that have witnessed trauma and deaths of others, there's the potential for post-traumatic stress disorder, which isn't just a feeling, and it isn't just an ethical issue. It's a psychological injury that requires careful care and treatment, and even people feeling suicidal and having a lack of meaning in life. So if you are feeling something like that, it's important to talk to someone. Mm-hmm. It's important to talk to someone that these are normal in the sense that they happen to people. I know Carolyn Pano and I have all flirted with these kinds of feelings in our lives. That is, if you're a thinking person, you're going to think about this stuff and feel it. But, you know, if you are really in a severe strait, make sure that you talk to someone you care about, because there are ways to cope, I think, with this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And the key to that is understanding for yourself and feeling understood by others, which is what I think we're trying to achieve here through this conversation, is to create our own understanding and to recognize that this is both individual and also collective. So often with mental health problems in the Western medical model, we individualize distress and we individualize despair. But when we're talking about moral injury here, Thomas, I think we have to recognize that this is both individual and collective, that there is guilt and shame and a collective responsibility, particularly from the global north and Western industrialized societies. And individuals can take on that guilt and shame on behalf of the collective because they are more attuned, they're more aware, they're more educated, and then they can feel that they can't do enough individually. Mm-hmm. Whereas perhaps some of that needs to be put back into the collective, that we are not doing enough.
Yeah.
And that can take some of the pain out of that and make it more bearable, more tolerable, perhaps.
Well said, I think. And there's a recent team number around children and climate anxiety and climate psychology, mm-hmm. Where both Caroline and I contributed articles, and for example, Sally Weintraub, who has also written explicitly on moral injury and climate issues, and also touching on guilt and shame dynamics and grief dynamics, which are something which combines all of us here all also. So one point of view into this comes more from grief research, but then it's always a mix of various things happening at the same time. This eminent grief researcher William Worden recommends reality testing guilt when counseling for grief. And that's something which I think I'm mentioning in my paper for the team number, at least it was in the draft. So probably something like that is very much needed regularly enough in relation to climate emotions also. So sort of admitting the responsibility, also the guilt when it's necessary, but reality testing that how much are we shaped by structural factors and all the connections in which we are living, like Caroline and Thomas have been talking about here, and then sort of trying to find a more balanced attitude to feelings of guilt or shame or inadequacy. But it's not easy, and I think it requires regular social support often, and sometimes existential or spiritual beliefs or communities may be helpful, but that's not always the case either. It depends on the community and the people there, and some people may have deep disappointments of their religious community, for example, because facing the climate reality, so to speak, may be profoundly difficult even for religious leaders who otherwise have much experience of encountering these kinds of deep issues. But thanks for naming these guilt and shame and inadequacy dynamics, and grief is also one part of that, I think.
I think picking up what you're saying there, Panu, and continuing with that, what can we do about this? What you know, and how can we frame this so that it's not all bad news? I think some of the disillusionment that occurs before that sense of moral injury may not in itself be unhelpful. Because if you think about what's being lost here, it's the illusion of safety and security and trust. So it can be replaced with healthy, trusting relationships, with different ways of navigating the world. It doesn't mean to, doesn't have to mean loss of everything. It's just loss of the illusion, if you like. One of the key things therapeutically would be reparation. We talk in psychotherapy, don't we, about, you know, rupture, reparation, repair. And some of that saying sorry, I think, is absolutely crucial. And that we can say sorry to ourselves and we can forgive ourselves for some of that. And we can also say sorry to others, because we're not ExxonMobil as individual people here. Mm-hmm. We don't want to take on their guilt and responsibility. That needs to be located where it belongs. So we have to take on our individual share of that and say sorry. And that saying sorry both helps us and helps the other. Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful illustration of this online. It's available, of Jacinta Ardern, who went to the First Nation People's Parliament in New Zealand and took part in what's called a sack ceremony. And they placed a sack over her head and she said sorry for the removal of First Nation people's children into, inverted commas, orphanages, schools, as part of the colonization of New Zealand and the genocide, fundamentally, of Indigenous people. And of course, Jacinta Ardern herself did not do this, but she was saying sorry on behalf of powerful others and ancestors, attempting to say sorry on behalf of the white colonists. And it's a beautiful short film online, so I recommend you watch it. She says sorry, and people are deeply affected by her ability to feel this, acknowledge the hurt, say sorry. It's not going to bring those children back, but as a validation of that wrong and that hurt, it seems to release something and allow people to grieve and then allow people to recover and heal and move on. It doesn't mean you forget what's been done. It doesn't mean you have to forgive what's been done, but you're no longer living with that hurt. And it's the living with the hurt which causes something that can be intolerable.
You know, this is really helpful. We had an episode a little while ago on what to do when you're feeling bitter. And that's where we talked about this idea. You don't need to forget things. And sometimes you don't need to forgive things that have been done to you. But yes, I think as there's so many important things we talked about. This idea, I think, Caroline, is key, this loss of an illusion, because we think something's safe, but it really isn't safe. And so there's a strength and a liberation in actually letting go of illusions that aren't healthy for us. But unfortunately, it's quite painful. If I have beliefs about the medical system or the honor of being a soldier or, belief in my society or belief in capitalism or, you know, taking part in my community, you know, that these are, there's shadow sides to these things, and in some ways we're living in an illusion that we get disabused of. It's similar to what we talked about, Pano and I, with on the waking up syndrome with Linda Bazell. So that's coming in here. So what I'm thinking about, you know, just as we move toward wrapping up, and I'm so glad we organically came toward this positive image of the sack ceremony. Just Pano talked about reality testing our guilt. Now that's a therapy term, but reality testing simply means we question it. We don't take it for granted. We're skeptical. Like, am I really guilty? Mm-hmm. And so, in what way am I guilty? You know, is it my fault? And that's what I do with young people, is say, you didn't discover oil. You didn't create the fossil fuel industry. You didn't create the nation state system. You didn't create capitalism. You were born into all of this stuff. So it isn't necessarily technically your fault, but you are complicit in it because it is part of the system you're in, but you can actually make choices and changes to be different. So it's that liberation. It's that feeling guilty, but not necessarily wallowing in it. So that's that asking critically, you know, and we can feel that this new term that I just picked up today in my prep, you know, this guilt without fault. How can I feel guilty and also know it's not my fault? You know, I'm guilty because of these values that I share and I'm doing things, but it's not my fault. And so that, you know, leads us to this kind of letting ourselves off the hook.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean we don't take action, you know, but we let ourselves off the hook.
Other language around that, which is quite familiar, I think, to a lot of people, is the differentiation between toxic and healthy guilt.
Mm.
That if we're attaching ourselves to a toxic guilt relationship, then we're just holding on to that guilt and not processing it, not moving it onto where it belongs. Versus the healthy guilt, which is, this is my bit, I can deal with this, and you can have some repair around that guilt by saying sorry.
Yeah.
And relink it to trust. Find healthy, trusting relationships as opposed to unhealthy, trusting relationships where perhaps you've been a bit naive, but not consciously, deliberately destructive.
Yeah, I think that's good. That's great. I'm very well put. And I'm reminded of Robert J. Lifton again, as often, and his work with also people who have been in war situations. And he has this term, survivor mission.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that's one way to cope with it, by finding a way of admitting both being a part of this and then having to do things not by your own will, but because the situation and structures led you to do it. And then using that experience as a survivor to help others who are in a similar situation. So I think there is examples of this survivor mission thing happening in places like climate cafes, where people share how they have been coping with climate emotions, for example.
Mm. Yeah, it's beautiful, Panu.
I just want to say two things. I want to reference the Lancet 2021 paper, Panu, that we co-published with our colleagues. And I'm just looking at the data in relation to the young people's beliefs about governments. And I'm looking at the UK figures. And only 28%, and this was in 2021, in the UK, believed that government could be trusted. So I just want to just reinforce that, the importance of trust, and the importance to recover trust in relationship. So I just wanted to reference that, because that was how we came around to naming the moral injury in that paper and thinking about the impact on children and young people globally. And those were globally shared figures. I think this moral injury could be argued to be felt generationally, either amongst children and young people in relation to older generations, but also from climate aware people in relation to those with the power who are failing to act, such as government and oil companies. And I just wanted to just come back at the end and just clarify that the guilt and shame that is often felt around the moral injury, we shouldn't be trying to get rid of it, actually, because it is healthy. But we need to be careful to put it where it belongs, mm-hmm. and not be feeling the guilt and shame on behalf of the gas and oil companies, for example, that they should be feeling. So you can remind yourself, alongside what Thomas has said about, you've not created this. You could also say, if you are feeling this, don't, because give it back to the folk who should be feeling it. And if they were feeling it, they might take more action on preventing climate breakdown. So by taking it on and feeling it for them, you're actually saving them from feeling it. So give it back to them.
I love that. Give it back to the system. You can feel it, but give it back. Or like you say, Caroline, I'll do my bit and you do your bit. And so, yes, we all have to do our bit. And that's part of our integrity. you know, moral, the healthy part of moral injury is moral integrity, living, having our values, having a clear sense of our values and living them out. So we do need to work on that, but we're not Atlas holding up the world. We have to give that guilt back to the people who deserve it, and including reflecting it back through our protests and through our art and through our activism. Wow. Well, thank you all for, you know, taking on such a big topic in 30 minutes. Listeners, I hope you got something out of this, and we'll put a number of interesting links to some of the things we talked about in our show notes. And Caroline, as always, really, really appreciate your work out there, and Panu as well.
Thank you.
Take care.
Everyone, be well. The Climate Change and Happiness podcast is a self-funded volunteer effort. Please support us so we can keep bringing you messages of coping and thriving. See the donate page at climatechangeandhappiness.com.